This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9. Bent Notes is our weekly jazz program going to air each Sunday night.
My special guest on Bent Notes is a multi-award winning Australian trumpeter, composer, arranger and educator who has worked with local and international artists across jazz and popular genres. He has performed with numerous bands throughout his career and he's been a catalyst for a number of festival projects. In recent times, he's taken on the challenging role of co-artistic director of the Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues, working with his colleague Zoe Hauptmann and Scott Salimno to create a program of exciting and awe-inspiring jazz and blues. However, COVID has changed the focus considerably over the last 12 or so months, and I also assume it's caused much confusion and lots of challenges. It is my great pleasure to welcome back to Bent Notes, Eugene Ball. Welcome back, Eugene.
David, thanks so much for having me, and thanks for that splendid introduction.
My pleasure indeed. As a musician who's performed at almost every Wangaratta Festival, I believe, what was the feeling you had when you were first asked to be a co-artistic director of the festival?
That's a very good question. Initially, actually, I declined the offer because of some other things that I have going on. I'm trying to finish a PhD and all that kind of stuff.
So wow.
I just didn't think I had the time for it. I was asked again and thought about it a bit more. And I thought, well, life is supposed to be messy and, frantic. So, and exciting and challenging. So yes, let's go.
What a way to do things, to take on extra workload like that when you've already got a huge workload. But I assume being an artistic director is exciting as well?
Look, it's incredibly exciting and it's a huge honour. That the Wangaratta Festival is, I think, for many Australian musicians or jazz musicians, the highlight of the calendar. It's a real center of focus for many musicians. We often, base our record releases or album releases around the festival. It's often the catalyst to create new work, so get a new project up and running. It's incredibly important for many jazz musicians and as such, yeah, it's a huge honor to take on the no small task of helping to put the program together.
It's certainly been a significant year of challenge for the whole community, perhaps a little bit more challenging, frustrating maybe for yourself and your co-artistic directors when you've been trying to put the program together when in actual fact you don't know whether you have a performance space, you don't know whether you have an audience space, you don't know whether you've got artists from overseas. Is there any way you can describe the number of iterations you've been through in the last 12 months?
Zoe, Scott and I have essentially rebuilt the festival program, in entirely different iterations. At least six times, each, with its own problems and challenges. It's certainly been a roller coaster and, like everybody, we've been, essentially looking into a crystal ball and making educated guesses and, plans B and C and D and all of those kinds of things. And pretty often our guesses or our predictions just did not come true. So, yeah, it was only a month ago, I think, that we decided firmly to continue with a purely online model.
Now, that purely online model, it seems to have been something that's been developed by a number of organisations over the past 9 months now. The Melbourne International Jazz Festival went online for three days of music. It's obviously the only way that you can get a festival to air this year. Were there any considerations that you gave to going online that caused you to have some trepidation about this decision?
The one big challenge, I think, and it remains to be seen, is that I wonder if, jazz audiences will engage with online content as willingly as they would engage with face-to-face content. I certainly hope they do. The other side of that is, is everybody you know, in general, just sick of being in front of a screen. I mean, I don't want to really push that because I really want to encourage people to, you know, come and engage with the festival as much as possible. And it's for that reason, really, that we've spread out the festival to be across a whole week instead of just on the Cup weekend. It allows us to roll out a smaller amount of content each day for 7 days rather than, you know, cram it all in over a weekend, which I think would be, you know, too much to ask of an audience.
From a perspective of watching, I'll be there online.
Excellent.
Because I wasn't quite sure how things would go with the International Jazz Festival, but I thoroughly enjoyed being able to connect in and be able to watch these performances. I certainly had lost the sense of being in the audience, but the sound was superb, the pictures were great, and of course, being on a television screen, it wasn't as if you were sitting in the audience and you got these people about hand size in the distance. They were right up there on screen. It was just superb. So I'm looking forward to your 7 nights of jazz and blues. It's going to be fantastic.
There's other positives as well. It, you know, being online means that people who wouldn't normally be able to attend can attend. So that's, you know, that's a real win. And I suspect that is going to have a kind of a long-term sort of flow and effect for future events of all sorts. I think one thing that we have learned from this is that online delivery allows, you know, a wider audience to access that material, which is, you know, really a wonderful thing. So that, you know, there's a lot of discussion at the moment about the idea that when we do return to face-to-face delivery, you know, whether it's in a club or at a festival, that there will be some expectation that there's a digital component as well.
From a performer's perspective, does it make much difference?
In my experience, it does. I've only done 2 or 3 kind of online performances, and they were earlier in the first lockdown. It is pretty odd finishing a performance and, you know, hearing crickets essentially in the background. That is a little odd. You know, we're all used to that from the recording studio situation, where we're used to the sort of intensity of performing, you know, deeply and with great intent, and, you know, then the silence afterward when you're in a recording studio. But it's odd when you're sort of when you know that you're presenting for performance.
It feels a little bit odd on this end as well, when you get to the end of the piece and you start clapping, you think, I'm the only one clapping.
That's great.
I feel very much that your audience is definitely clapping for you, even though we're not in the room with you.
Well, one of the great things about the online way of delivery is that it allows, one way that the audience can engage is through messaging. They can post messages about the performances as they're happening. And so they can interact not only with the audience members, but if the performance is pre-record and not a live stream, then it actually allows the audience to interact with the performers as they are in fact performing.
My guest on Bent Notes is co-artistic director of the Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues, Eugene Ball. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
Let's have a bit of a chat about what we've got. We must start, of course, with the National Jazz Awards, the final 10 performers. That's vocals this year.
It is vocals, and we've got some really fabulous finalists.
But you're not actually getting them all to perform in Wangaratta.
No, we had planned, obviously we had planned to do that. And, you know, in our second to last kind of design of the festival, we were hoping to have, you know, some live performances in Wangaratta. Specifically, we were hoping to have the National Jazz Awards in the main theatre at the Wurpak Theatre, as well as a large outdoor event for locals featuring lots of blues acts and, you know, the sorts of jazz acts that are relatively easy and popular to engage with. But we had to make a decision. It turns out that I think we could probably proceed with that now, but we had to make the decision when the extension of the Stage 4 restrictions was announced. It meant that no Melbourne musicians could travel to Wangaratta. So that kind of put a dampener on that. We had to rethink that entirely. Mm. So the end result is that there's no live performance in Wangaratta. So the 10 finalists will each record in a studio in the state in which they live, with a top pianist as their accompanist.
We've got from WA Lucy Ifler, Lauren Henderson from South Australia, Brianna Callishaw from New South Wales, Owen Meesday from West Australia, Jessica Spiner from Queensland, and then there's a number of Victorian competitors, Olivia Candamo, Rita Satch, Joshua Kyle, Harriet Allcroft, and Amelia Evans. What a crowd you've got there. That's going to be superb.
It really is. I've had the pleasure of working with quite a few of these vocalists, and you know, I hold them in high esteem.
The program outside the National Jazz Awards, is there a standout?
Yeah, well, for me there is. The festival has commissioned 4 solo improvised pieces from, 5 musicians. So from Scott Tinkler and a young drummer by the name of Maria Moles, and Wolfer, which is a duo of Jenny Barnes and Mick Maher.
Yeah.
And the previous co-artistic director of the festival, Adam Simmons, will also create a piece as well. And I'm really looking forward to those. One of the things that I really wanted to do at the festival, you know, if it was in situ, was to have a series of short improvised pieces by, well, from expert improvisers who are at the festival with other bands. And that my thinking about that is that free improvisation or entirely improvised music can be challenging to listen to, especially if it's if you have to commit to a sort of 50 or 60 minute concert of improvised music. I figured if we had these kind of 10 or 15 minute short vignettes of completely improvised music, it might allow audiences who don't usually engage with that kind of music to just give it a go, because it's only, you know, a 10 minute experience. So that was my hope, and it turns out that that's actually transferred quite well to this environment, because some, you know, extremely talented and highly skilled improvising musicians also have the recording equipment in their houses that will enable them to record their own works. And that's a key component here, obviously, because we can't have artists traveling to studios. We've commissioned them to come up with a 10 to 15 minute piece each, and I'm personally really looking forward to those. And most of those, or 3 of those, will be on the Wednesday night. And Adam Simmons's contribution will serve as a link between the performance by Alex Herlian, who is the young drummer from Sydney who was the National Jazz Award winner in 2018, and Kika Rammers, who is a young and very exciting Dutch saxophonist. The story behind this is that when Adam was the co-director of the festival, he nurtured a relationship between the Wangaratta Jazz Festival and the Amersfoort Jazz Festival in the Netherlands.
That rings a bell now.
Yeah, and the basic deal is that whoever wins our National Jazz Award gets a spot in the Amersfoort Jazz Festival the following year, and we take one from their laureate program, which is kind of like the NJA,
yep.
And we program them here. So we're trying to keep that relationship alive. It's potentially a very exciting relationship that we, you know, really want to nurture. So we're going to have Alex play at the start. He's creating some new work specifically for the festival.
Superb.
And then Adam's going to, you know, tell a little bit about the story, the background behind the relationship between the two festivals. And then he's going to give us a beautiful improvisation. Then we'll hear from Kika Rammers, the saxophonist from the Netherlands, who was part of the Amersfoort Laureate program in 2018. She's got this fantastic large ensemble. It's a 12-piece ensemble that's an extension of her quintet that is, you know, presents really, really accessible but quite interesting music. The idea is that, you know, all things going well, we'll be able to bring her out next year and have her perform some of her large ensemble music with some Australian musicians.
Oh, that'd be superb. That'd be magnificent.
That's what really I'm hoping.
Really would be, Eugene, yeah. Now, you've got a free community program going online as well on the Saturday.
We do, and that's very much a part of the spirit of the Wangaratta Festival, is that, you know, there always has been a strong community element, and it's very important to the identity of the festival. So we were quite insistent that that still remain. So there's some local groups from Wangaratta, including Scott Solomo's blues group. So Scott is one of the co-directors, and he's an excellent blues guitarist and singer. So he's got a group in there, and there's also some, let me see, there's a young vocalist from Wangaratta called Emma Christie, and her quartet will be playing, as well as Paris Zakharou and Mark Bolsius, who are locals, who will be doing some lovely vocal and piano duos.
Oh, superb. And that'll be coming live from Wangaratta.
That will be coming live from Wangaratta. They do have access to the WAPAC Hall to pre-record. It won't be live, it'll be pre-recorded.
Okay.
But, you know, it's actually very little difference in terms of listener experience, except that the quality is guaranteed.
That's true.
There is an immense risk with live streams that, you know, sure, it adds to the excitement, but it's also adding to grey hairs, I'm sure.
No doubt there's been a few of those grown this past 12 months for the three of you on the artistic team.
Yeah, I mean, we've been keeping our cool, but yeah. The other part that I'm of the community program that I'm really excited about is the highlights from the 1986 Australian Jazz Convention. So I'm not sure if you know about the Australian Jazz Convention. It runs between Christmas and New Year every year since 1964, I believe. And as such, it's the longest continuously running jazz festival in the world. It's not a festival in which performers get paid, but so people kind of volunteer their time.
Yeah.
And it's you know, largely traditional jazz that you'll hear there. And that was my upbringing when I was a child, and I have very fond memories of going to some jazz conventions when I was, you know, quite young, and, you know, starting to jam a little bit with people and even taking a band up when I was 16, I think. It was a really terrific place to, or a terrific environment in which to immerse myself in traditional jazz. And that, you know, there would often be really fabulous players from Sydney and Brisbane, and the festival changes location each year, so there's always different musicians at each festival. And so yeah, the Australian Jazz Museum were very kind enough to give me access to some recently digitized recordings from the 86 Jazz Convention, which was in Adelaide. And I've just been trawling through those at the moment, picking out some of my favorite performances, and there's some crackers.
Audio purely or video as well?
No, they're video as well. So they were filmed on some, I'm not sure of the format, but some kind of high quality video format from the 80s.
Oh, someone was forward thinking.
Yeah. So yeah, they've recently been digitized because the, you know, the film itself was starting to deteriorate. And so now we've got them permanently. So it's going to be, I've still got to work through it all, but I'm really looking forward to putting a fantastic program together from that.
Oh, it sounds absolutely superb. The AJM does a fantastic job preserving our jazz heritage, don't they?
They really do.
My guest on Bent Notes is co-artistic director of the Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues, Eugene Ball. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Find more Joycasts and show blogs, go to joy.org.au.
What else have we got on our program? There's so much there. You've got Zella Margosian Quintet. Zella is finishing the festival on the Sunday night.
Yeah, so we when we realised that we were going to go, you know, entirely online, we reached out to organisations across most of the country. And, you know, we got lots of love come back to us, which was really lovely. So we've entered into co-presentations with COMA in Adelaide. That's the Creative Original Music Adelaide. And with SEMA in Sydney. And with the Governor Hindmarsh Hotel also in Adelaide. So the COMA, with COMA, we're co-presenting two concerts. The first one is with the Joe Laurie Quartet. Joe's an amazing Australian vocalist who has been living in New York for many, many years and, you know, touring, I think, most famously with Sting. She just happens to be in Adelaide. I'm not sure, quite sure whether she's stuck there or choosing to stay there. I'm not quite sure. But nevertheless, she's there. So we are able to program her doing, and this will be a live stream from the Wheat Sheaf in Adelaide. And that'll be fantastic, and that will feature her partner and saxophonist, Will Vinson, who's a terrific, also New York City-based saxophonist. The other concert that COMA will present, or co-present, is the New Cabal, which is a real Adelaide institution. It's Lyndon Gray, the bass player. It's his ensemble. They've had a residency on Wednesday nights in Adelaide for 10 consecutive years. I believe it just finished up, but that's, you know, that's monumental.
That's a huge outcome, isn't it? 10 years.
It really is. And, you know, I mean, from my perspective as a musician who has generally been associated with bands much more than as a kind of, you know, a soloist, you know, I've been with the Hoodangers for the 25 years that that's been around. I was with Alan Brown's quintet from the start to finish. I was with Andrea Keller's band for 15 years. I'm a real believer in the benefit of a group of musicians staying together and working with each other to develop, you know, a real identity and a real sound. And that doesn't happen by accident. It needs regular performance for that to happen. You can't actually get there any other way, I don't believe. You can't get there from rehearsing. You have to perform. So, you know, for the New Cabal to be able to perform every Wednesday night for 10 years, that means that they are one hell of a cohesive unit with a really distinctive identity.
That will be amazing to watch, I reckon.
I'm really looking forward to that, yes.
There's still more to go, but we're running out of time fast, Eugene. So I must say thank you very much. We should mention that the program kicks off on Monday, October 26, with the National Jazz Award finals for two artists, and then Barney McCall kicks off the featured artist part of the program, and then finishes on Sunday, November 1, with something happening each and every day of that week. Eugene, all the great details are on the very informative website, wangaratajazz.com. Is that also where the tickets are?
Absolutely. I would urge your listeners to go and buy tickets immediately. they have the flexibility of either buying a single day pass, or you could buy several single day passes. There is also the option to buy an entire festival pass, which I've got to say is actually cheaper than a typical night out. I'm urging people to do that regardless of how much they intend to watch, simply because it'll really help to support the artists and the industry that's been, you know, so brutally decimated by the COVID situation.
The entire entertainment industry has suffered dramatically in the last 8 or 9 months, and it's still got a way to go. I reckon I'll go out and buy my ticket shortly. Then I'll be able to see all 7 nights to enjoy this amazing music from these superb artists from both local and overseas. I think it's absolutely amazing, Eugene, that you can put together a festival such as the Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues in a year that we've been hit with such critical impacts from the COVID-19 virus, and yet still have people from the local environment of Wangaratta, from Victoria, all the states around Australia, and then from overseas. It's just a fantastic job you've done.
David, thanks very much. It really has been a challenge, but we're super proud of what we've arrived at.
I look forward to chatting to a couple of the artists over coming weeks as we get closer and closer to Monday, October 26, the kickoff night for the 2020 Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues, the 30th year as well.
That's correct.
A great celebration to be had. Eugene, thank you so much for joining me on Bent Notes tonight.
David, thanks again for your support.
My special guest on Bent Notes has been Eugene Ball, the Australian trumpeter, composer, arranger and educator, who's also the co-artistic director of this year's Wangaratta Festival of Jazz and Blues. You're listening to Bent Notes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.